to Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined tonight by Adam Camilleri.
Hey, it's me. I'm back. Did you miss me?
What's up, man? I did miss you. We are the Battle of Lost Souls podcast. On this episode, we have some neat things. I'm going to insert a segment from a fairly new show called 40K Today. I think they're doing some great work. They do a daily 15-minute show. And believe me, I've been on the show at least once, and they limit you to 15 minutes. And that's difficult for me to
learn. Oh man, I don't know if I can handle it. I don't do well with restrictions. I feel the need to push and press. It's a bad habit.
I've got to stretch my legs. I've got to walk around the topic a little bit. But, you know, look, that's not what their show is about. It's more than sound bites, but it's getting some insights, some clear insights from a lot of different people in our expanded community. And I think their show is amazing. I'm going to insert one episode. I think it's going to be this episode that we put it into, either in the middle or towards the end. It's 15 minutes. Hopefully you dig it. I dig it. And we may do that once or twice a month.
I'm a big fan. It's a little 15-minute like variety program. It covers a bit of everything. It's a really good snapshot. Like I wonder if you put the weeks together in like a single thing, what the picture would be. Because I think they give a lot of really relevant information.
I've made a request. I don't know if they can do it or not. I'm certainly not trying to impose on their time either. But if they, you know, when they do a week show, if they give me 15 minutes, 20 minutes of their best stuff for that week, that might be a cool segment to insert into here.
Yeah, I agree, man.
But you know, whatever. Awesome. The segment as is going to be good. They find some people out there that some names you know, some names you might not know, but folks out there making a difference. I think their show is neat and happy to shine a light on them. With our program, I think the cultures match up really well. People make it match up really well. Got to meet a couple of them in person in Vegas at the LVO this year.
That being Mr. Damaris.
That's it. Yep.
And there's the New Zealand gentleman, which I'm just really happy to. I mean, I follow 40K Cabal, which is a New Zealand podcast. Might not be for everybody. It is a bit on the cruder side, which I personally enjoy from time to time. But I'd like to see more of New Zealand content, New Zealand producers getting out there. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, Steve's also a great guy. Enjoyed talking with him over these last few months. And I think it's going to be cool. I think you guys, if you aren't familiar with it, I think you're going to like it. Let me know the feedback, though. I mean, I think we're going to try to do it once a month, maybe twice a month. If you want it more than that, if you want it on the feed itself, I mean, heck, let me know. We'll figure something out. Nothing's off the table when we see good stuff like this. But I can tell you that we're going to get at least one show in one of our episodes real soon and probably get them on to chat with them about their philosophy, about why they're doing what they're doing.
Yeah, I want to know what's inspired them. Like, and why that format? I mean, there's so many different podcast formats, streaming, and all sorts out there. Why specifically a daily? I feel like streaming 40K daily, especially starting, they've literally started in the kind of the worst time to stream daily for content wise, being, you know, COVID and all that stuff. Why the format? I feel like it's not a chore, but unnecessary pressure on yourself to have like relevant things to talk about every day.
If that's where you think the gap is, man, get in there and make it your own. And I think they're doing it. So, I mean, again, this, you know, people will vote with their ears, but I think it's good times.
Well, I just think it's a great indictment of the game and the community that there's the possibility for a daily variety program that has daily content that's relevant. and I listen to it. It's good stuff. Like, it's no joke. It's no, some days it's a bit off, some days it's a bit on. No, it's usually on. It's usually pretty good.
Yeah, you never know what's going to be that spark of inspiration, man. Like, just a brief aside, that back before 8th edition launched and where Games Workshop was doing those little brief spoilers every day leading up to that edition change. And here in Atlanta, we actually had a collapsed bridge on one of our major arteries. And so traffic was just borked. And so most people were working remotely. Like me, I couldn't really get into the city. It was an extra hour long to get in the city. So I just worked remote for about 2 months.
I'm sure everyone was heartbroken.
Right. So much like we are right now. You know, but then it was a lot less accepted. This a couple of years ago, obviously. But I thought, man, it's a really good excuse for me to get up and make myself presentable. So I'm going to start doing little quick videos in reaction to the news we're getting from Games Workshop.
Yeah, I think, yeah, exactly right. Okay. I remember what we did when we were down for that day at LVO.
Oh, yeah.
First day of LVO. We couldn't get up and going.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Man, get spawned from this.
Exactly right.
I think it's going to be great. Please indulge us at first, and then you may come to those conclusions as well. There'll be some personalities you might not know. I think they're great. I enjoy listening to them, and I think they're, more importantly, their heart's in the right place, and the culture's real similar to the show that we jive here. The pace is a bit different because, yeah, you're taking what would be an hour or 30 minutes down into 15 minutes, but that's okay. It's a nice little bite, little morsel, making you want a little bit more later, and that's what we're here for.
No, well said.
Oh, we got some other big announcements to talk about. Something that's actually, if you listened to 40K today, you would have already heard this, but Adam, I'll let you do the honors.
Yes, so some exciting things are happening in the more of the organizational standpoint, but also for the user and for the general 40K player. So for those unaware, Down Under Pairings, which was a pairing software, mostly a web-based pairing software that I was happy to be a part of that organization, has now partnered up with BCP and creating a new organization. Well, it's still going to be BCP, but coming together to share knowledge, experiences, and try our best to put our heads together and make a holistic one-stop shop for all your stats, organization, tournaments, events, everything, purchasing. Like, yeah, we're really trying to create something really, really, truly special for the community moving forward. So that's something that's still being announced as what that will look like. But there is a lot to be excited about there. For me, just the stats side of things, just the information we can pull, the insights into the game, how it's played, how it's being played, how people want to play, the units people take, the armies they choose, the secondaries, all the things that inform the health and well-being of a game. Is just going to be growing exponentially out of this. On top of that, hopefully tournaments get easier to run. Hopefully everything just gets real rosy and shiny for just everyone involved. And we can all move forward together into a brand new post-Rona world with something brand new for everybody.
Well, BCP is Asbestos Pairings, for anybody who may not be aware, is awesome. It's a tool that took – it changed the face of what is required to run a tournament. You know, before it used to be spreadsheets and and lots of people and stuff like that. And now it kind of made it a little bit more simple to where one or two people could run a major event all by themselves.
And at times those two people could also play in that event at the same time.
Yeah.
So what it did was it created a wholesale paperless system. So that, and then on top of that, it created things like the ITC rankings. It made them be able to be very, very relevant for the whole world. Everybody could connect through that and see their rankings, see how they're doing for your goals. And then a centralized place for people to kind of continue to grow in the game. I don't know how relevant it is. I know it's a lot more relevant in the States than it was in Australia, where I'm from, because that's where we start naturally. You know, Down Under Pairings is an Australian thing that a gentleman named Josh Diffie created because he wanted to run his tournaments better. And that's literally why it started. I can only speculate at this, but from what I remember, it was a similar inspiration for BCP. I think it was a request from a few longstanding tournament organizers, you know, such as Reese and people who run Nova and things like that. Not quite sure their involvement, but people of that ilk wanted a solution to running large scale events paperlessly, centralized, and with consistency across the board. Mm-hmm. And those are what these applications have offered. And now hopefully two of the better ones, naturally I'd freaking say that about my own company, but two of the best ones are coming together to try and create something much more amazing than the sum of their two halves. For those completely unfamiliar, Down Under Pairings was a web-based program. You would run your tournament through a web browser. You'd set up your tournament. People would sign up to it. You'd check them in. You'd start the rounds, and that would manage the pairings, you know, what tables you're going through. And then people would upload their scores onto the web page, and that would the tournament organizer would get the back end of that program available to them for them to look at scores and do whatnot and organize their things. You could, you know, you'd manage all your soft scores through that, so you could do sports through it and painting and all those things. And BCP was – Down Under Pairings put a lot of effort into the managing and presentation of stats. So we tried to gather a lot of information. So at times we would be able to tell you the prevalence of secondaries, like by people picked, even state by state, town by town, faction by faction. We'd tell you, okay, people who play Space Marines don't take recon as much as orcs do or whatever. And we'd be able to tell you that because we gathered that many stats. BCP went the other direction. They were an application, and they tried to keep things as simple and as intuitive and as user-friendly as possible. And we caught some backlash for that. My organization did, saying, oh, you guys just make everything so much more complicated. But that was for the sole purpose of providing information and gathering information so that it could be relevant to the community. But now we're putting those two things together, as in the gathering and presentation of statistics and data, while also being ridiculously intuitive, user-friendly, and widely accepted. So
that's great. I mean, you got some capable people, some people that can make this stuff happen if they're working towards the same goal, and I mean, and not independently, right? I mean, not on their own things. They can kind of boil it down into the same thing, hopefully bringing those skills, working independently, then we're going to get some of that same stuff. I mean, like there used to be this thing on, I think it's called the Mad Money, like the Kramer show, where he had this countdown it was actually a count up. It was how many days should Sirius Radio and XM Radio have merged before?
Kind of thing.
It's been 37 days since Sirius XM Radio should have become a thing. And it finally happened, right? Now, I don't know what he's replaced the clock with, but there's now one major satellite radio firm that has allegedly more combined stuff. So I'm glad it happened. It should have happened, but there was an opportunity for it to happen with them bringing comparable things to each other, not enough comparison, but with enough individuality that would help everyone that wanted to interact with a tool like this.
Yeah. And I suppose like we started a dialogue with BCP, just pretty much touching base, just saying, hey, like we're not adverse to anything. We're kind of open-minded and think we actually complement each other really well. And we just started talking. We're like, oh, these guys are just the same as us. They're all, every single member of that community, sorry, of that organization, are gamers, passionate gamers about the community, trying to do the best they can for the games that they love. And I think starting from that standpoint meant a lot to me and Josh, especially, because that was exactly what we are. We're just a couple of guys trying to do the best for the community we love.
Yeah, that's great. Man, I can't wait to see more of those functions coming together. Because me as a user, you know, I do enjoy BCP. I understand that I like the ability to use it in the app, and people get to put in their own scores. They have to agree to them.
Mm.
You can change them pretty easily if necessary. Comes about later. There's things you can do in that. But you're right. There's a lot of, I don't want to say human elements, but fun elements. Like part of what I'd like to get out of this is being able to hype up and talk up other players and or hype against, or do some playful chiding, or use the powers for good or evil. But there's a lot of that available in Down Under Prairies.
Well, yeah, so I'm a big fan of, look at the NBA. NBA, I think, does this just as well as maybe the American football. I'm not quite as up to date on American football, but sometimes I watch the NBA and I'll put up a player profile and you'll just see like how many jump shots they've hit, their rebounds, assists, all that stuff. Like, I want to be able to go up to a player, and this is it's so good for trash talk. It's unbelievably good for trash talking. It'd be like, oh, buddy, I see you've picked old school 7 times recently and you've gotten an average of 2 points.
Sucks yeah, here to it is, brother. Still on your sucks to you. That's here exactly it is. Right.
It's right there, mate. Can't hide. Yeah, like, I love that stuff.
You've never won when you've gone first. You know, like in this whole tournament. Yeah. You get those points, those data points through Down Under Pairings a lot. It seems to be a lot more easily than you would be in BCP. So, you know, look, I think this is good.
That's because that's something, yeah, we put a lot of, well, I'd say Josh Diffie put a lot of effort into growing and maintaining and making sure that was a big driving force. Because once again, that just comes from his passion. That's something that he's passionate about and he loves, and therefore it became a thing. So, hopefully that transpons into moving forward for the community and that being widely available for everybody, because that's certainly one of the goals. We want, like, new people coming into the scene to be like, oh, well, I don't want to, I love this army. So I want to look at somebody who plays really well at this, you know, not so much a net listing. I want to know what people play when they play this, you know, what are the secondaries they pick? And you can start from a position of strength rather than, I'm speaking from a competitive point of view, rather than walking into the tournament.
Net listing is not a crime.
No, it's not a crime. I'm not for or against it. I'm not an advocate of net listing. Say, oh, if you're starting the game, just go get a net list. I think educate yourself about what you want out of the game. If you want to play competitively, then you should know what the best units are. But by all means, if you love a unit and it's not that good, take it. Don't take like 9 of them. Don't put like three quarters of your points into that one unit that's probably not that good. But freaking take it. If you love it, take it, man.
I've got a neat example. Sorry, if you got a point, I'll yield.
That was the point.
I've got a really neat example.
You'll yield.
Yeah, well, I've got...
I will yield.
Look, I've got a, a person who wrote into the show and he wants to know, he wants some help about making Black Templar work.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, he's...
Man after my own heart.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of these things like, look, he said, I don't want to go Primaris. I kind of want to let that range kind of develop and get on its own. You know, there's not really Black Templar bits for them yet or whatever. I want to play mostly regular old Space Marines. And he's picked up some Space Marines from a friend. So he's got what appears to be about 800 or 900 points of Black Templar.
Nice.
Ready to go. You know, he's like, yo, what should I do? And I said, one, you should absolutely play whatever it is that makes you feel good. And this is Matt from the 40K GB Club, which are also, they're a club. They've been friends for many, many years. As they've gotten older, they've grown into different sections of the world. I don't quite know if they've all come back together, but they've at least stayed a club. And they're just playing for how they want to experience the game. So that's like, it's like 90% about what this show is about.
Yeah, agreed.
So talking about Black Templar, I was like, look, you don't have to go. If you're making a conscious decision to not go the Primaris route, which is fine. Maybe you don't feel like retro, you know, buying all the entire army. Maybe you don't like the look of them. Maybe there's some, you got something in you that you really want to get out some of that Crusader squad.
Yeah, baby.
You know, and that's all you can do. You know, you're not going to feel happy unless a unit like that does something that you think is worthy of the name. Like, who hasn't been there, right? I said, you might want to consider drop pods. I mean, with the chaplains and then the Black Templar kind of special rules, they aren't bad. And if drop pods aren't your thing or maybe not as accessible to you, then go rhinos. You know, I said, I actually kind of prefer the rhinos.
Yeah.
But there's nothing wrong with a drop pod.
Well, I just think drop pods are very unforgiving. Like a drop pod can come down and be a game winner or it can be a game loser. Because let's say your opponent's got a couple of units that are like gene stealers or something and you give them a freaking drop pod to tap, oof, that's a bad exchange right there. Even if you kill 3/4 of the unit, if those 5 guys get to kill something and then tap, you're like, I actually haven't won that exchange. So yeah, I actually prefer rhinos because I like ramming rhinos down people's throats. It's a very enjoyable pastime.
Yeah, I think I do, but I think there's... You know, there's a quantity or quality of the quantity if you get enough drop pods with enough bodies. I mean, because I think that's one of those armies you could easily be distracted. Oh, just let me throw in this one more character model for a situational buff. Like, man, that's like 7 dudes I could have had in there. That's 14 attacks I could have had.
I am still such a... Okay, so here's my advice to this gentleman. Go buy, when Forge World reopens, go buy yourself the Sigismund model and convert it into an Empress Champion. You're just never going to regret that in your life.
That's true.
You could be an old man dying in your bed, you know, not having had you lived your dream job or traveled everywhere, but you're like, at least I bought that Sigismund model and turned it into my Empress Champion.
That's a very fair. I support that plan. Absolutely, 100%.
That's exactly what I did, and I think it's a fantastic model. If you're talking Black Templars, look, they actually got some fun stuff. I'm not going to go out and say that they got some great stuff in Psychic Awakening, but they got some fun stuff, and I'm going to say Grimaldus, like Chaplain Grimaldus, is severely underrated.
He gets 2 powers too, right?
He gets 2, and they have their own specific litanies. Like they have their own strategy. Like I think they've got the No Overwatch coming out of a Land Raider strat, which I think is cool as hell.
Yeah, he has a Land Raider too, and I said, if you pin this around the Land Raider, either you want rhinos or drop pods. That was my advice to go in the direction he wants to go in.
If he's not adverse to... getting a little bit on the powerful side, like a unit of Centurions in a Land Raider that can't be overwatched, doesn't sound like it's going to ever be a bad thing.
That's the truth.
Back them up with Grimaldus, like giving them 2 litanies when they get out, and yeah, you could get a lot of work done. It might not be optimum at all, but
that
I just feel like that's fun as hell.
He doesn't have to win every game. It's what he said. I mean, it's the exact words. I don't have to win any game, but he wants to preserve the theme and he wants to, you know, feel like he's in it. You know, sometimes I guess that's what I'm inferring. You know, otherwise, why put it any time at all? And then not really use any Primaris stuff for this particular force. Yeah, he also has another Marine force that he'd like to use the Primaris for. So I mean, it's not like, you know.
Okay.
But whatever. I mean, I get that too.
I think that's sick.
Yeah. So these are the kind of questions we get. People write in about army list, and we asked them, yeah, what's your goal here? Do you want to make better use out of what you've got? Are you open to buying new stuff? Are there any things you'd like to avoid? And then we sit down and try to craft something a little bit better. And maybe, you know,
yeah,
I think we crafted the exact list in this case, but we at least gave some options to consider, and I'm happy to do that for anybody out there.
Yeah, me too.
Struggling.
Yeah, like the little podcast I ran for a little bit, Game Against the Grain, that was the entire premise, was there's so many people out there who want to feel like they can have a game against anybody, but aren't so enamored with the idea of just taking the same units everybody else is.
Yeah.
Like they want their special sauce. They want their like three or four units that they absolutely love, but then they want a list that still has some pokes, has some power. And so that whole podcast was just for, because I think that is a good percentage of, especially the competitive community, but if not just the community as a whole. I feel like there should be more out there to appeal them. Maybe I'll start that podcast again one day.
Well, that's most of the people that write in, they've got some, you know, you can find the net list and stuff almost anywhere. You can even find that in BCP sometimes. I mean, there's,
yeah, yeah.
You know, they're not like that difficult to come by, but what is a little bit more difficult to come by, or maybe people aren't as open to talking to, is like, yo, I've got this idea. But see, that's kind of, if I can go one step further, that's when we're talking, like you and I talking, Adam, you know, like, yo, man, I've got this idea. I'm going to make two Mauler Fiends work. And then you're like, Paul, you know, those aren't going to work. I'm like, no, hear me out. You know?
yeah. Just listen, man. Just listen.
So we get a little bit.
And then I say,
yeah.
And then I say something like, well, if you love them, why don't you just look at the blood slaughterers of Khorne
from
Forge World. And dude, the model, the crab legged like blood slaughterers, they're so cool, and they're actually just better than,
yeah, yeah. Or you say, you know, something along the lines of, well, have you really considered taking in the Master of Possession or something? You know, you whatever. There's a,
yeah.
Dude, yeah. Or if you're really committed to that, then this is what else you have to put in your list to do it. You know, and that's where the fallback question comes into: am I committed to buying new figures, or do I just want to make the best of what I can with what I've got?
Mm. Yeah, dude, man, I really want to make. I love Demon Engines. I should do that army sometime.
Yeah, no, Demon Engines. Big fan. Cool. They all look cool. Like there's so many out there now. I mean, we've got.
Yeah, you get like it.
The yep. Roller Fiend, so not the Roller Fiend, whatever the Death Guard one is. You know,
the Roller Go-Kart. Fiend. The Mythitic Blood Haulers. The Go-Kart.
We got the Venom Crawlers.
Yeah, the Pukey Go-Kart. It's forever now.
Yeah, you've got the Mauler Fiend that transforms also into the Forge Fiend.
Yeah, and we've got Lord Disco now. Yep, who,
and the Hellbrute.
And we've still got the Defiler. And good God,
oh, yeah.
That if there is a model that needs an update, even though like it's such an OG, like you look
not,
at it and you're like,
and not just the Defiler and the what's the
Soul one? Grinder,
Soul Grinder. Yeah.
When I look at this. The Defiler, it's literally feels like something I would have drawn as an 8-year old.
Oh, you should have seen all
that. It's got a big gun in its chest, and it's got crab legs, and it's got claws, and it's, you know, I'm just letting my imagination run wild.
Well, there was a model, like I think they published some of these in a White Dwarf.
Yeah.
And they were just like that, just everything you just described. It's like someone had just told them what it looked like. It's like they had read something. Like in Alice in Wonderland about what the Jabberwocky looked like or something.
Ah, yeah, yep.
And then
that works.
Glued some kits together, and then that's what their stuff
was. That's what they got.
I mean, it looked good. Like these were like contest entry things, but that was back in third, 3.5 or something like that.
Well, I still think that the file looks, I mean, it looks like what it is. If you're like, oh, I wonder what that is. Oh, it looks like a Demon Engine. Now, you're never gonna mistake it for anything else. But yeah, it just needs to be updated. I don't know. Yeah. It needs something. But on top of that, the one that I've been enamored with for a long time is the Chitin Demon Engine.
Yeah.
The walking Lord of Skulls. I like the Lord of Skulls as well. I wish they both of those weren't just Khorne-esque, the Khorne aesthetic. I wish there was like maybe there was an upgrade kit for either, like a different head for the Lord of Skulls. Well, it's called the Khorne Lord of Skulls, so maybe not that one.
You
maybe
could
the
hold on for the Chitin version, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. If you had a different head option, different shoulders option, maybe an upgrade kit. Something like that. That could be really cool because I've seen people convert. Oh, there's a guy who converted one to have the bell off the Screaming Bell kit.
Yeah.
To having that over its head instead of the Khorne symbol. So it's just the Nurgle bell. I thought that was incredible.
Amazing bits.
Oh, yeah, dude, don't they ever. Bits. Especially for Chaos. There's so many good bits.
Yep.
Then there's the Decimator Engines and there's a couple of different flyers. There's the Hell Turkey, of course.
Yep. Well, there's several Hellforge stuff from the Forge World stuff. But anyway, yeah, man, if somebody wants to build an army around that kind of stuff, then, I mean, those are the largest block of questions that we get into. It's like, I would like to build an army this way. And they come to it preconceived, right? They know, like, I understand this is not the tournament winning list, you know, and that's fine. I would like to play the game with this stuff, and I'm okay if I win half the time.
I've always been pretty impressed about how, generally speaking, most 40K players know what's up. It's like, you know, there are so many different diverse metagames out there, and there's always this percentage of people who are really, really up to date with what's good, what's bad, what's winning, what's losing. And then there's this kind of middle section that kind of got their finger but don't really put enough time in. And then there's the MISC, the Hufflepuffs of the scene. They're just happy to be there.
They're just rolling out their figure, whatever. Just being there, it's a social thing for them, man, which is...
And you've got a guy who just loves going to tournaments with his mates. He goes ones and fives and drinks like 30 beers, and he knows exactly what's winning tournaments. He's like, yep, this is exactly the list, and it's Iron Hands, and it's got Pharos in it, it's 5+, 5+, all that stuff, blah, blah, blah. And I'm consistently always impressed. Like, I tell people, oh, have you looked at this? And they'll be like, oh, yeah, that's because that's got this rule, this rule, this rule. And I'm like, I didn't need to tell you anything.
Yes, yeah. Always ask before I get too deep into what I think you should do. Like, what are your goals with this? Mm. And then what's your expectations about how it's going to do? And then, you know, and the larder comes down to, you know, just want to play with this figure, and I do where I don't want to buy more stuff. It's either you do or you don't. And I'm never going to shame you one way or the other when we're talking about the list that you're coming to me for help with. That's it.
Well, yeah, it's none of my business. Yeah. Like, you're stupid for wanting to think that's good. That's just the wrong. Yeah. That's wrong in every way.
Never going to get it. Now, I may heavily advise that, look, this would be a lot better if you did this. But still, if you're going this way, this is what you got to do.
Yeah. And there's a lot of different – one of the best things about 8th edition is a lot of different internal granularity between units. Like, if you can take the Skuria maybe less good, less optimum version. And it can do, if you play it properly, it can do just as good in a lot of situations as the one that's better. Like, a prime example would be Aggressors, yeah? Aggressors, they're not as good as Centurions. Maybe you like Aggressors more than Centurions. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And there's a lot of ways you can use Aggressors that they can be almost as good as Centurions. Like, you can make them hit almost as hard. And if you're savvy with
move almost as fast.
Yeah, well, they move faster because they can advance and shoot. And that's exactly right. That's what they have going for them. They have different uses and methods of getting the best out of them. And I think that's only really become a big thing in 8th edition. I feel like in 7th, well, especially towards the end of 7th, could your army build a Death Star? Nope. Well, sorry, brother.
My army can build a Death Star.
My army can build a Death Star, unless you're a Tau. And sorry, Tau does have a Death Star. Tau is... Yeah, never mind. Tau has more Death Stars than everybody, but theirs is just more holistically looking. They look like a unit, but they look like an army, but they're actually just one unit.
Yeah, they definitely look like a unit.
Like those five, Riptides with the Riptide wing. The one unit of, was it one unit of three, two units of two, two units of one people used to take, or was it two threes? Anyway, whatever, can't remember. But yeah, stuff like that. And man, 7th edition. I actually still miss it though.
Well,
still miss it sometimes.
Matthew, thanks for sending in the question. Gave us some really interesting things to talk about during this segment of the show. I hope you and the 40K GB crew out there doing well, keeping yourselves busy.
Sick.
Yeah, man. I like talking about Black Templar.
Dude, me too. I'm actually going to play some soon. I gotta dig mine out and play them. I dropped them for the Dark Angels, but I just need to play with that Sigismund model. He needs to go kill some stuff. And of course, he's probably better than he's ever been before.
Sick model.
The Empress Champ. Oh, the Empress Champ in general is just probably in the best shape he's ever been in. And why wouldn't I want to use that? Doing crazy good things.
That is fair enough. So as non-40K related, today is May the 5th.
Yep.
Which over here in the States, we celebrate two things on May the 5th. Cinco de Mayo and Revenge of the 5th.
Yes.
And that means Star Wars yesterday
and death.
Yesterday was May the 4th be with you.
Yeah.
So we celebrate Star Wars.
Man,
I'm not trying to be like culturally insensitive to anybody or whatever. The Star Wars stuff is obviously, you know, fake, made up by us nerds clamoring for more holidays. But look, We got a lot going on right now. I'm going to take any positivity we possibly can.
Yeah, well, that's really true, isn't it?
So yesterday, for May the 4th, we ended up watching, we've been watching the entire Clone Wars series again. I say again, when the Clone Wars came through the first time, I watched the first couple of episodes of the new season back when my oldest was my only. I didn't care for them. There was something about them. I mean, the animation was fine, but the stories, maybe I caught them on a bad arc or something. It just kind of felt like, you know, if I'm going to watch it, I'll just watch the movies. It'll be fine. You know, I know what happens. And then they did, and also, but even before that, they had done a different animation, like pre thing for the Clone Wars, which I did really like. I really liked that. You know, I know I'm dividing some people as we speak right now.
Yes.
I'm not trying to be, but I'm telling you, when no spoilers, and I won't do any spoilers for the new stuff, but there's in the scene in the older one, basically the prequel to the thing, where Mace Windu is responsible for grasping Grievous's chest to give him that wheeze. I thought that was really, really cool. That gives you some
Mace does context.
It does a bunch of power stuff, and you get the thing like, this is why Mace Windu was a Jedi Master. This is why Mace Windu cut off Jango Fett's head without even thinking about it. This is This is what's up. This is why Mace Windu can do all this stuff.
Talking about Mace Windu, remember that scene where he takes on this huge stomper droid?
Yeah.
Himself, like the whole army had the stomper droid, and he kills it all himself. And you're like, oh, this guy is mad badass. And it was, he didn't say a single word in that entire thing. He was just flying around being a badass. Love it.
I think that was the thing, is that they couldn't use words in that contractually or something.
Oh, because they couldn't get his voice, or they just knew that
anybody, couldn't do anybody's voice. I think it had to be a silent thing. I mean, I don't know. There was that film, or that particular hour and a half or whatever, was not supposed to be made. It was made by people that were not affiliated with Lucas, and then Lucas bought him and did it his way or something. I don't know the story. Okay. I may be butchering the story, but that's the one.
Sounds good.
Go back and watch that one. It's cool. But then go back and watch the other one. It's cool as well. And I've been telling people for years it's not cool, that I didn't like it.
But you watch these recent ones and you've been sold?
Well, I've watched the whole series again because of my youngest. So I got two boys. And he's at the age where he's like, yo, let's watch Clone Wars. And so we've been sitting down and watching two or three Clone Wars a night. We finally got to the end. And season seven starts, it's a big deal. And even then, look, I don't even want to say that all the Clone Wars shows were great. They weren't. Some of them were clearly throwaway shows.
Filler,
I mean, but there's a few. I mean, I didn't hurt my feelings for watching them or anything, and I certainly gave them a lot of tolerance, knowing that I was just going to, in 22 minutes, we're going to be on to the next one. But there's a couple storylines like, whatever. And even in season seven introduces these two characters that end up being paired up with Ahsoka. And I don't care about the characters. The characters make bad decisions that Ahsoka has to rescue them from consistently. Okay. And then they don't seem to want to be rescued. They don't even understand that she is rescuing them until it's much, much later. And I don't think it added to anything about Ahsoka that we didn't already know.
She's such a unique character in that timeline. Yeah. As in, like, because, well, so there's a, I don't know how up to date we are with Star Wars Rebels.
Oh, loved it. Watched all of them. Same thing. So season one, a little rocky. Season two, three, boom, boom.
Oh, dude. I haven't watched all of them, but I just watched, I watched the Vader bits because I'm a Vader fanboy. And yeah, I'm down. She was awesome.
you should watch all of them. I said season one is just a bit kind of kid-like. Season two, they make Ezra a little bit more mature. Give him a little bit more of a mature look and is less kid-themed. But we watched it as a family, you know? And there are some very impactful moments to the storyline in the series. It's worth it. It's worth watching.
Yeah, there's some incredible... Absolutely. I'm so happy I watched it. Even if I just watched the Vader scenes.
We're not a Star Wars show, so I won't go too crazy or whatever. But in this last four episodes of The Clone Wars, it changes, right? So the whole feel of the show changes. The opening is different. The pace of the show is different. I hope I'm not giving away any spoilers.
Sorry, but that's the second time I've sworn. So I'm not on for 2 weeks, and all my good works get undone.
So you're you get a sense of what's happening, and then the last four episodes happen in parallel to Revenge of the Sith, the movie.
Wow, yeah. That's fantastic. So yeah, that's Order 66 and like the fall of the Jedi, and that's really cool.
And it's done in a way that's like, wow, if this goes any differently, we have a different movie, you know. And if you watch Rebels, you know that like Rex makes it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is a story about how that happens. And it's real good.
I'm keen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm watching that tonight.
Quality. Like my oldest had to go decompress a little bit after he saw it. And I don't blame him. You know, sometimes I get, you know, like, hey, whatever, man. Just a show, just a book, just a this, just a that. Mm. But this really resonated with me too, but definitely him. You know, because once you start, granted, you think you know who Ahsoka is, and then she becomes her own, and then you meet her in Rebels, and that's something different. And then at the end of Rebels, what happens, and you know, now you start to look like this is all synced. You know, this is what Star Wars needs right now.
Continuity.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, and no plot holes.
Yeah, or
not that there are
fewer plot
holes. Not that there are any plot holes.
I was pretty critical. I was actually on this Axanar. They do Axanar, the Facebook page. They do a twice daily stream. And I was fortunate.
Yeah, you tell me about this.
Yeah, to be able to get on there. They do. I've had them on this show before talking about their Star Trek fan film, Axanar. And they've got, you know, Prelude to Axanar and some other things. And, you know, they've got their struggles about, you know, because they're basically flying real close to the sun.
Mm.
I mean, in a good way, though, held up by their own ingenuity, fans doing it, you know, for them. You know, and I shouldn't say doing it for them, but helping them out with support. They had some good quality actors involved in this project, and I really hope to see it all come to 100% fruition the best it can, because yeah. they're just good people.
I don't know enough of this entirely in its context to have like a definitive right or wrong question, but I just respect the gusto and respect. Yeah. Putting your money where your mouth is, putting your time and effort into something you love so much. And I just hope they get a result that's amicable and worthwhile for the amount of love and passion they've put into it.
Including these twice daily video streams that they do that I was able to go and be a part of.
Yeah, you'll tell me about this. Awesome, dude.
Yeah, it's neat. So, I mean, I was on, it was, I actually came on May the 4th. So that was yesterday. And I got to talk about Horus Heresy. I got to talk about the Black Library novels. I got to talk about Warhammer in general. I got to talk about how it compares to Sigmar, what's different about Sigmar in the old world, Lord of the Rings. And then we talked a good solid 30 minutes on Star Wars.
That's sweet.
I got to kind of, you know that I can find a nice way to describe things, even if I don't, you know, I'm not 100% hot on them. And I was asked about how I feel about some of the new Star Wars movies.
Yes. And are you going to illuminate us here, or should we go somewhere and see for ourselves?
You can see for yourself, because I think there's this moment where there's like, you know what? I'm not even going to try. We are unbelievably shackled by the horror that is that second movie in this new trilogy.
I can't agree more. I didn't watch the last one because I haven't seen the most recent one, and simply because I think I disengaged from the franchise, disengaged from the universe.
That's fair.
I'm kind of hoping I'll watch Clone Wars. I'll watch the latest Clone Wars and get reinvigorated and be like, oh, Star Wars is awesome. But maybe I should just watch Rogue One instead.
Yeah, no, I mean that's completely fair. I mean, there's a lot of things. There's things in the first one, but I give it a pass because it's okay, good. You're trying to set the scene. It's trying to set the stage. This is a kid's movie. This is ultimately a kid's movie.
Yeah.
And we're having to re-engage a bunch of those kids in the way that we want to engage them. And we're going to borrow some scenes. So it's trying to play on that nostalgia because nostalgia is big right now, you know, and get some things done, set up some new characters, and then let's move on.
Well, yeah, I just thought it was just going to be a lesser New Hope, which I was happy with. Like, if you're going to restart a franchise, start it with people reminiscing of the things that they loved about the original. I thought that was a fine idea. But then I saw the second one, I'm like, yeah, if you want to compare this to Empire, oh no.
When the dude, like, he goes to pick up the salt when they're in the trench, and he's like, looks at the camera and says, it's not salt. Or, sorry, it's salt. So he says, salt.
It's salt, yeah.
What he's basically saying is, it's not Hoth.
Yes. Like, it's, buddy. Yeah, let's not.
Like, well, you know, you did get to choose what the planet looks like. Like, the reason we're confused about that it might be Hoth is that it looks exactly like Hoth.
Yes. Even, Yes, yeah. Facing down walkers, yeah, AT-ATs and stuff. Yeah. Like, wait, AT-ATs are the chickens or are they the four-legged?
The AT-ATs are the four-legged.
Yeah, that's what
I thought. They're called AT-ATs, by the way.
Oh, really?
AT-AT
They're actually called AT-ATs. I always thought it was AT-AT. Never mind.
No, the AT-ST, but, you do say it that way.
But you'd what a wow. Really?
Yeah.
I'm perplexed now. Well, so
we're going to get some mail on this one, but yes.
Yeah, we are, absolutely. yeah, so it was the fact that they're, you know, they're cornered by the Empire. They're in trenches facing down AT-ATs. Like, it was tough.
And it was difficult to say AT-AT for you.
It's so much worse than AT-AT for some reason. if you watch, you ever watched, now this is going way off topic, but Jim Jefferies is quite a controversial comedian, and he refuses to say ISIS. He says Iziz instead. I think that's hilarious.
Yes, they just put so much stuff in there, and it's a giant crime that we never got the big four characters all reunited on the screen. It's a big disservice.
Those being...
Oh, yeah, we need Han, Luke, Leia,
and Chewie.
Chewbacca, all on the same screen.
I just got really annoyed that when Han died, Leia comforted Rey, who'd known Han for like a week or two, and didn't say anything to Chewie. Chewie and they'd been like lifelong friends and been through everything together. Nah, comforted Rey. I was like, that's kind of junk. I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. There's a bunch of that kind of stuff in there. Yeah. I don't like how, I know I'm trying to catharticism to get this out or whatever, is that they're almost, Poe and Finn are almost referring to each other as generals, ironically.
Mm.
And I don't think that that's what the resistance needs when they're about to go throw their life away.
Yeah.
You know, they need people that have, and Finn, who has tried to run away 100 times. I think he tried to run away twice in the last movie.
I've already sworn once. I can't really find myself to care about the characters because Rey is so infallibly perfect at everything she does.
I don't mind that.
I'm down with that.
Maybe she goes through a different, but
she's adorable. I'm not saying that Rey's character isn't adorable, but you can't compare with the cute ball of glory that is Baby Yoda. None of us can.
I mean, I'm saying I can't. Rey maybe can.
Yeah, I don't know. I like my characters with some grit. I like my characters to be imperfect, which is why I liked Han so much.
Yeah.
And because he went through this transformation through the first, through all of them, actually. Like, he went back and forth. You know, he got captured and had to pay his dues to Jabba and came out and was still a resistance fighter and still wanted to stand up for love and dreams and freedom and stuff. But even Luke, you know, had to go through a lot of doubts to come out to the other side to become somebody who was able to resist the dark side and defeat both the Emperor and his father. Mm-hmm. And Rey just kind of like rocked up and she's awesome at everything. They tried to give her that kind of arc with Luke, though, but then they just, in the process, just kind of killed Luke.
Yeah, no, that and was. We would have so much better movie if we all got to do a redo. I'd like a mulligan on The Last Jedi.
Well, because it sounds like. So I haven't seen the last one, so I shouldn't be too disparaging to it because I don't think that's fair. But I feel like no matter where the last one came from, it was going to come from a tainted position because of how. Well, and not universally. There's some people who love that movie, and I fully respect people's, you know, right to love something that I'm not going to never. The same as never going to tell somebody they're wrong for playing a certain unit in 40K. I'm never going to say someone's wrong for like liking something that they like. You know, if you like it, you enjoy it.
Yeah, you like it. You like it.
You are right in every way that matters. And yeah, but I feel like no matter how I walked into that cinema to watch that last one, it was going to be coming from a place of disappointment. And I was like, I'm not going to do it to myself. And the movie probably deserves better than that, so I was just going to dodge it. On top of that, I didn't care because the three reasons that I was – sorry. All the reasons I had that connected me to the story were gone. Han was gone. Leia was – well, unfortunately, Carrie Fisher passed away. And Luke was now gone too. And I'm like, there's actually – seeing as I have no connection to the current characters, why would I go and watch this movie?
Yeah.
I have no investment. I don't care about any of them.
Yeah, but so why do I care about this 9-movie saga now that none of the characters that I've been teetering on this entire time?
I mean, I can like Kylo Ren in the first one was actually really good.
I think he's good in all three of them. He's the strongest one.
I feel like he was playing his character perfectly. I respect the actor. I like the gusto. I like the way it's portrayed. I enjoyed him probably the most out of all of them. But like apart from Chewie, where's my connection to my childhood? The nostalgia they tried to tweak so much and tried to leverage is dead. They killed it.
These actors are trying to do, you know, what they're told to do, what the script tells them to do, what the directors are telling them to do, and they're bringing their own style to it. And, you know, I did enjoy, like, the acting job of the people there. I wasn't disappointed with that kind of stuff. I was just the choices the characters were making, such as running away. Like, even, and I've said this on that XNR live show, was that, you know, Poe at the end there of the movie, and I'm trying not to be spoiled, there's a moment to where it looks like everything's all but gone for the resistance, and Poe's like, oh well, I guess that's it, guess we're all just gonna sit here and die now. And then some hope shows up, you know, and then he perks up. Yeah, and he needed to have perked up 5 seconds before and been in the middle of his perk trying to do something. Yeah. You know, might have been failing, right? I'm not saying his perk up should have worked. I'm saying that he should have done that without any hope of victory. And then that tells me he's a hero. That tells me he's worth to be the general. Not that he's the one that can just call a shot after it's been played, you know.
Mm. Yeah, that's very true. I don't have a lot of issues with the actors or the acting. I've a lot of issues with the characters, how they're portrayed, and the plot. Like, the plot of the second movie was speed. Bus cannot slow down, bus explode. They made speed in space. It's just, what? Why?
Well, and then the third episode, like, they're mean to 3PO the whole time.
That's disrespectful.
It's not just like, well, Han is always shut him up or shut him down. You know, never tell me the odds. And everyone else is like, hey, 3PO, what's going on? You know, it's like they're all like collectively like bullying 3PO.
That's no good.
It is no good.
Kids movie. But
they're exactly right. And then 3PO has to make some speech at the end like, I just want to say, have one good look at my friends. Like, well, these aren't it, 3PO. Hate to break it to you.
They don't like you.
These are people that you kind of know that are still alive.
They treated you like garbage for like 3 hours now.
They should have did something where he just switched his optics where he thought he was looking at Han and Chewie and Luke.
Mm.
I know we're going way off on a tangent,
dude,
here.
I like this tangent though. Like, I haven't had a chance to get a good Star Wars rant in for a while, man. So someone pointed something out to me after that movie, because I was you know, I had a group of mates, we all watched it together, and we're like, guys, what is there to say about this apart from what the hell did we just watch? And one of them pointed out that there's, so the whole premise of the show, that they can't slow down or else they'll get caught. So they have to keep burning their fuel, and then the fuel's eventually going to run out. So it brings pace and pressure to the story. Mm. There's no inertia in space. There's nothing to slow you down. You just hit max speed and turn your engines off. You're not going to use any more fuel. You just hit max speed, turn the engines off. You're going to coast at that speed. As long as you don't run into anything, you're fine. The whole premise of and I was like, wow, that just kills the whole premise of the show, isn't it? There's actually no pressure. They have an infinite amount of time, as long as they can turn on to steer every now and then. There's actually no need for this movie to have been made. They're fine. They're gonna get away eventually.
Star Destroyer could have jumped 5 feet in front of them.
Well, yeah, but I mean, they could have done that anyway.
Or if
they could have done that at any point.
If they knew you could send a spaceship through another spaceship, you could have sent a TIE fighter through it by itself.
Literally, if you could do that, there would just be, it's orcs. Orcs had this down pat. You know, rocks that orcs use to, you know, transpose through, and they just land, they just crash it into a world, and then whoever makes it out of the rock, I guess they get to go to war. Like, hilarious. If people could do that with light speed, if you could weaponize light speed, no one would have any guns. People would just have like, this cargo container. Let's put a hyperdrive on this cargo container. Man, we got the best weapon anyone's ever had.
Yeah, I don't know if the books have retconned that, but that needs to be. Like, she's from a special planet. She's the only one in the universe that knows how to do that. You know, there's just no reason why that wouldn't be done all the time.
Well, literally, because like an X-wing has. I mean, I don't know if all TIE fighters have hyperdrives, but I know X-wings do.
Yeah.
Like X-wings, Y-wings, all those things, all the ones the Rebels use. So why wouldn't you just fly them? Oh, shoot them through through Star Destroyers. Oh, shoot them through the Death Star, right through the core that you're gonna have to fly and lose 200 guys to go into to that middle core bit.
Straws, like one guy.
Well, one guy. Sorry, brother. Suicide mission. You're gonna save the galaxy. Bam, done. Just gotta line up that shot perfectly, like shooting swamp rats back at home. What was the gap he shot? Oh, that was Solo. Yeah, in Solo they shot that whatever gap. next to that big monster thing. I also won't see that movie.
So maybe good. I will. I enjoyed it.
I heard it was all right.
Well, it came out during a very difficult time. Like, people were fatigued off of Infinity War.
True.
People were fatigued off the previous Star Wars movie.
That's actually really true. Yeah, so, it probably didn't have a very fair run. Mind
it didn't. So, but it's like, got Woody Harrelson in it, right? And it's got, was it Emily Clarke? You know,
how can anything with Woody Harrelson be bad? Yeah. That man is a gem, national treasure.
Yeah, he's cool. No, it's a decent movie. You learn some things. There's some things in there that are kind of hokey, but there's some things in there that are pretty cool.
I would like, in the comments of whatever medium you watch this on, put rank your Star Wars films. Rank them for me. The only thing I'm really interested to hear is where you put Rogue One.
First, please give us a 5-star review before before you come to the realization that you've been listening to us talk about Star Wars on a 40K show.
I need to know where people put Rogue One, because I don't know where to put it. Is it better than some of the first three? New Hope, Empire, and Return. Like, is it better? Is it just off? Is it fourth? Is it like, where's Revenge of the Sith as
second.
Well? Yeah, you think it's Empire, then...
Yeah. Revenge of the Sith. Let me tell you, the Clone Wars... I know I'm going off on a tangent. Again, I'm a tangent of a tangent.
Well, we're continuing the tangent.
But in the Clone Wars, even in the last several episodes, again, no spoilers, but Obi-Wan doesn't get enough credit. And I shouldn't say he doesn't get enough credit. He doesn't... He plays second banana sometimes to Anakin. And I guess it's because he's trying to teach him and want him to come to his own decisions, eventually become his own man and that kind of stuff. But like, there's some times when, like, let's just add up all the factors. Obi-Wan trained under Qui-Gon Jinn.
Yep.
Obviously, well-respected Jedi. Respected by Mace Windu, respected by Yoda. Mm-hmm. Well-respected Jedi. By all accounts, powerful Jedi. And he's also Liam Neeson.
So yeah, he has skills that cannot compare.
Yeah, he has a particular set of skills. Those skills.
I forgot the whole thing, but it's hilarious.
Have a particular set of skills.
That's right.
And if you hurt one hair on my Padawan's head,
on Anakin's head, Obi-Wan's head. So you read the young adult Star Wars books, yeah?
I did.
Where it was when Qui-Gon first like chose Obi-Wan, and how Obi-Wan had to go through all this stuff before Qui-Gon would choose him. And how Qui-Gon was always supposed to be on the council, and Mace and Yoda wanted him to be on the council, but he always rejected it because he felt like his purpose was to be like the roaming Jedi negotiator, peacekeeper guy. Hence, he was chosen for the Naboo mission because he was like the most active, I guess, master Jedi that wasn't on the council. And I just found that stuff really interesting. How, especially Obi-Wan coming from a very flawed position. He wasn't overly powerful in the Force. He was average, wasn't especially talented. Wasn't especially charismatic or special like, you know, Anakin was, where everyone can just be around him and know that this guy was special. And yet probably the most probably the second or third most pivotal character in the whole lexicon of the lore. Like, he's had a finger in everything.
Well, he killed Darth Maul.
Yep.
No fans about killed Darth Maul. I mean, Darth Maul eventually comes back, but not without sorcery and witchcraft and some other crazy force stuff we didn't even know existed or whatever. But he killed him. He killed General Grievous. Like, it wasn't no thing. I mean, chased General Grievous around his own house and eventually killed him.
And beat his ass.
Yeah. I said, I love that scene. There's a scene where he looks down and Obi-Wan's like, there's about 400 robots down there and Grievous. And whatever, I'm jumping down.
Yep, I got this. It's fine. Yep.
Kills them all, kills Grievous. Chases Grievous a little bit and then kills him. Then has to go fight Sith Lord Anakin Skywalker. Who's fueled up on all that? He's done. Skywalker's gun siphoned off all the force from the younglings and how many other things, and he just beats him too.
Yeah, I love everyone. I think he's my favorite character.
Yeah, and then in the Clone Wars show, sometimes he's like, I don't care, do whatever you want, do what Anakin thinks, I don't care.
Yeah,
and then he makes one decision at the end of the Clone Wars series. No spoilers, because I know everyone has not seen it. That. I wish she'd handled slightly differently. It would not change the outcome of what happened. I just wish that he was more of a participant in one of the things that's an outcome. And 2-3 weeks down the road, when I talk about it, you're going to be like, shut up, Paul. Like, it was fine, you know.
It was fine.
For me, I wish there was just he was a slight more of a participant in the outcome of this one particular thing.
Cool.
Yeah. Again, no spoilers, but it's awesome. And yes, you do see a time jump at the very end of it. I'm not going to tell you how much time. I'm not going to see what you see, but you see a brief time jump at the end of Clone Wars that just kind of brings it home.
Nice.
It's worth it.
Maybe we should talk about 40K now. Maybe not. Maybe we should pick another tangent.
Let's take a break. And we'll come back in with something. And Adam, you might not be able to join us, but I'm going to come back in with something that is 40K related, and then that'll be the rest of the show.
Outrageous.
Yeah. I know we were on a bit of a dive there.
I like the dives. Dives are good, man.
Well, Star Wars is my jam. Like, I've been huge fan of Star Wars for a long, long time. That was one of the things on the Axanar show. Alec asked me how long I've been into Star Wars and why I got into Star Wars. And I've got kind of a tragic story as to why I'm as into Star Wars as I am.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not, like, I'm a boy who likes lightsabers. So, like, yeah, I'm going to be into Star Wars. But when this came out, when I was 2 years old.
Yeah.
And, yep. You know, my mother was basically needing reasons to get us out of the house. And so we would do things like go to the movies or go to drive-ins. And I would just want to, so we'd pop a big ball of popcorn, sneak it into whatever it is we were going to see. And that's how we'd spend our night watching Star Wars. Yeah, I probably saw Star Wars 52 times in a theater or / drive-in.
Wait, do you mean the original trilogy? Or surely you don't, surely not the original trilogy.
Yes, the original one. Yes, Star Wars, 1977. When it came out.
How old are you?
I am very old.
What the are we still recording?
Yeah.
I assumed that was maybe it would have been Return of the Jedi. Maybe.
No.
But yeah. Wow, dude. I'm jealous. I wish I got to experience that time. Because it was almost a golden age of cinema.
Well, those are kind of back then, right? You know, and still to this day, people tell him, you know, you can't do it, you're not going to be able to make it happen. And then he goes and makes it happen.
Mm.
And, you know, practical effects and that kind of stuff. And I was just enraptured by it. And, you know, had all the figures, had Bantha Tracks. I was a member of the fan club.
Yeah.
Had to mail out to get the Boba Fett figure and several. It wasn't just the Boba Fett figure. You had to mail away for a few figures. I think Nine Nub was one of them as well. Back, you know, when you got up to the Turn of the Jedi, the Emperor.
Mm.
I think was also a figure you had to mail away. I may be misremembering it a little bit, but I distinctly remember having to do that stuff. And I remember sitting, and I told this story on the show too, but I remember sitting in a drive-through. Wait, we're waiting in line for the drive-thru for food, having a discussion about who we thought Luke Skywalker's father was going to be.
Yeah, what were the options back then?
Yeah, I mean, who was Anakin Skywalker? Is he going to come back? You know, is he going to come save the day? Is Darth Vader really his father? Could Darth Vader be his father? You know, those were real conversations that we had leading up to us going to see Empire Strikes Back.
Mm.
There are things I didn't see Empire Strikes Back quite as often in the theater as Star New Wars.
Hope.
Yeah, yeah. I can't. It's hard for me to call it New Hope, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. And then, did they? It wasn't called a New Hope upon release, was it? It was just called Star Wars.
Star Wars. Yeah.
They only started calling New Hope when they realized they were onto something good and wanted to make a franchise.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. It was always Episode 4.
Yeah, that's actually interesting, wasn't it?
But Star Wars Episode 4.
So weird. You started Episode 4. Like, why?
I don't, you know, look, that's the reason why he just sold it for $4 billion. I mean, that's not just, but some time ago, sold it for $4 billion, gets to do things his way. I hear people just tell me that he's not a great director. Like, I mean, cool, show me your movies.
Well, I would just say that I think we can say pretty confidently now that seeing as what is the prequel trilogy, and he obviously had a hand in writing the current trilogy as well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know about a hand; it was more advisory.
Yeah, but you can say with some confidence now that he had some truly incredible people working around him also.
Yeah.
For that original, sorry, when I mean original trilogy, I mean New Hope and Empire and stuff. And that was not just him being a good actor; that was him surrounding himself with the right people, the right musicals, like the musical score.
Yeah.
Just talking about the music score for it is an odyssey in itself.
Mm-hmm.
The practical effects, like they're not terrible now. You watch them and they're like, oh, this actually is kind of cool still.
Yoda it holds up just really fine. Look like a puppet. I mean,
yes, he actually looks worse in the freaking episode? What is it? Episode 8. He looks worse in Episode 8 than he did in Episode 3, 2, and 3.
Two.
Sorry, 5 and 6. So, my lord.
Yeah, look,
why did they have to do that to us?
We knew what you meant. We knew where you're going.
Yeah.
But now it's,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, again, I'm devoted to it. I hate it that we're just saddled with some of this other stuff, but there's a lot of good stuff in there, and that is it's worth the fandom. Still to this day, if that's your fandom, it's still worth it because
yeah,
whatever. But I enjoy it. I'm not wavering at all. But so we just watched like I mentioned, the end of the Clone Wars, and it really brings it home, and makes you immediately want to watch Rebels, and then immediately then go watch Rogue One and then start the whole thing over again.
I love Rogue One so much. Yeah. Everything about it.
Yeah.
Taika Waititi just got announced that he was going to be directing a Star Wars film.
Yeah. Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to be pretty good, right?
You can't argue with that success. The creativity of What We Do in the Shadows.
Jojo Rabbit, most recently.
Is that
which...
what it is?
Yeah, it's a Jojo Rabbit was the film we made most recently, which got him a couple of Oscars or Emmys, like one of those good award thingies. But it was set in Nazi Germany as a story of a little boy, and it's a comedy. E.g., like if you think about Springtime for Hitler in Germany and The Producers, it's just kind of a tongue in cheek. And I love that he has this line not in the film, that he said afterwards, and like, oh, how much preparation did you do for playing Hitler? And he said, none. Yeah. Why would I put any preparation into, I feel like the most disrespectful thing I could do to him and the monster that he was put no effort into, put zero effort into learning to be Hitler and researching him.
Yeah.
And I just like, yeah, I can jam with that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking forward to it, man. Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau have, they've got me. I'm hooked on what they're doing.
Yeah.
Man, I cannot wait. And it's real relevant to talk about right now because today is still close to Star Wars Day.
Yeah. It's true. I mean, right now it's the sixth here.
Oh.
So we missed it by a little bit, but, future land and whatnot.
It's Revenge of the Fifth over here now.
Yeah. Doc Martin and Marty just got out of the thing. The TARDIS just rocked up, I think I'm good.
Nice. All right. Well, let's take a break. Something's going to be happening right on after this. And then after that, who knows? I might be back with Adam. I might be back with somebody else. But for everyone who has indulged us, thank you very much. I'll try to edit this down to be something kind of poppy and make sense. But this is whatever. We're all friends here. We're all kindred spirits.
That's right.
See y'all in a bit.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
This is 40K Today. 40K news so important, the Emperor of Mankind once called it the Other Primarch.
Hiya 40K family and welcome to 40K Today. It's Star Wars Day. We'll get that out of the way right away. May the 4th be with you. I know it's old and you already knew about it, but we had to acknowledge it. Today we have a big announcement as we welcome a new member to the 40K Today team. Someone who's already making big waves in the world of 40K and is all set to bring great content to you. Also on today's show, regular Alex May to run through some of the big reveals and releases from the weekend. And we're going to check in with Trevi from Tactical Tortoise about the huge TTS tournament he's running. It's going so well, and there's a way for you to see all the action as it happens. I'm your host, Steve Joel, and our first thing to do is a poll question. It's live on our Facebook page. Let's kick things off with that. Our 40K Today poll today is this. Have you tried playing the game on Tabletop Simulator yet? And how's it working out for you? So far, we've got a lot of positive comments. People who are taking part in tournaments right now, people who are enjoying playing against friends outside of the area. We want to hear from you, though, good and bad experiences. Have you tried, yes or no? That's the poll question up on our Facebook page right now. That is 40K Today. Now, we have a big announcement to make. Over the weekend, we welcomed a new member to our tight little 40K Today team, a woman who has a growing reputation in the game for producing quality content. She's been invited to take part in some of the biggest 40K events, and in fact, as we went to air, had just done a huge live stream with a group of other content creators called Warhammer 2020. John Damaris rolled out the red carpet to welcome Tanya Gates, aka the War Mistress.
Okay, Tanya, or better known as the War Mistress. you know, you've been a guest in the past, and we've certainly enjoyed having you. I think you were our first woman in Warhammer, so that was awesome. But we have big news. You are joining the 40K Today team to help with social media. So why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself, and then let's talk about maybe some of the things that you have in the works that I think are pretty cool.
All right. Well, I am mostly focused on Instagram for my own personal sort of journey. I'm known as the War Mistress there, and I sort of document my painting as well as my journey into playing ITC. So I've been playing for about a year. I've been documenting my painting for about, I think, 16 months or so. And it's going really well. I've built a really big community of really amazing people around myself there. And I'm just sort of having fun with it.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the team. We're excited to have you because, you know, I don't really need to explain this, but I'm going to. But we're a little bit socially media inhibited. Is that a good way to put it? So having somebody that has a little bit of experience with a lot of passion like we do, I mean, that's the big thing that we picked up from is you have as much passion as everybody else on this team. And so it is, it's fantastic. It's just fantastic. So thank you for that.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
And then let's talk about what are some of the new initiatives you've already bringing to the table. You know, I know we're going to do something really cool with very coolly painted models. You want to talk about that for a minute?
Yeah. So as a team, we sort of decided that we would like to have a sort of model of the day or mini of the day. So it's something that you guys, I think, are going to talk about on the podcast. And then we're also going to feature across our social media. So this might be just an amazing model that we've come across. It might be maybe a listener sort of wants theirs shown off. Maybe we might do that. And we've actually already started by showing off your personal models that you had commissioned.
Right. Yeah. Cause I can't paint. I have no artistic talent. I can't draw a circle, a straight line, or a square. So like, having somebody paint for me is kind of a big deal. And that was, yeah. Stiffneck Studios, by the way. And if you get a chance, go ahead and go out to our Facebook. You can see some pictures of my models. They're beautiful. I mean, they're stunning. And you can just check them out. And then you should also check out Stiffneck Studios because they are one of the best painting services on the planet. They're fantastic. And then we're starting out something else new where we're going to get some more engagement going with the community where you guys can actually have sort of a say in what goes on in the show. So you want to talk about that for a sec?
Yeah. So on our Facebook, we're going to be running weekly sort of polls where we're going to ask our listeners just different questions about different aspects of the hobby. And you guys can weigh in and tell us what you actually think. And then if you could also sort of elaborate a little bit in the comment section, it would be really interesting for us. And we would actually like to highlight some of those comments that you leave for us on the podcast as well.
Yep. Very cool. All right, Tanya, thanks for joining us. And we're looking forward to great things on the team.
Thanks for having me.
It's so good to have Tanya on the team already. She's bringing new ideas, making our social media great, and getting the rest of us running. Okay, let's find out what else was going on over the weekend in our hobby. As usual, content producer Alex Bainter has been keeping a close eye on all of it. Let's hear him break it down with John.
All right, Alex, it was another exciting weekend in the world of Warhammer 40,000. Let's talk about a few things that you noticed that sort of came out over the weekend. I saw that you saw a real quality lore piece from Chapter Master Valorak. You want to tell the listeners about that?
Yeah, so Chapter Master Valorak is a huge Imperial Fist fan, and he did a video going through like the breakdown of their companies and their just chapter organization. It's really cool because he like lists off all the different characters and their roles in the chapter.
Cool. So it's a good way to sort of get a feel for like the military organization of the Imperial Fist. So if you have any interest in that, it's worth checking out. We'll definitely put a link in the show notes. Also, coming out this weekend, they had a teaser for a new Play On tabletop video. And it's, I think it's for their 40K and 40 Minutes series, which is excellent. If you haven't checked that out, you definitely could. What's going on with that?
Yeah, so that battle is going to be between the Necrons and Blood Angels. A really good match there. And it's going to be a 1,750 point game, which is a little odd, but still cool.
Yeah, very cool. And if you haven't checked them out, they have the highest quality video content that I've seen as far as like streamed 40K games. They're fantastic. And then the last thing we want to talk about is an option for people to kind of follow if they want to make some more terrain for use at home or maybe even at their game store. What was that all about, Alex?
Yeah, so the YouTube channel Wylock's Armory, he does a lot of great terrain building videos using like recycled material. And he put out a video doing like a factory kind of building using old cans and like pipes and stuff. It's a really great video.
Cool. And is there anything else on that? Like, you know, you said they did a whole factory, but is there a bunch of videos for doing terrain at home?
Oh, yeah. There's a ton of videos. Like, he does a lot of Dungeons and Dragons builds, a lot of 40K builds. Yeah, just a whole bunch of stuff using a lot of like recycled material or like really easily available, readily available material.
Cool. So if you guys are looking for additional content to check out, it sounds like Wylock's Armory might be for you.
It's Alex Bainter. And for the links to everything that Alex was just talking about, check our show notes, as always. Next up on the program, tabletop simulator tournaments are popping up all over the place. There are folks leading the charge in the move to playing competitive 40K online. And one of those people is Trevor from Tactical Tortoise. We speak to him next. Welcome back to 40K Today. Long-time listener and regular contributor to 40K Today, Trevor from the Tactical Tortoise YouTube channel, is running a tabletop simulator tournament right now. It's competitive 40K online. It's been running a couple of weeks, and things are starting to get really exciting now in the tournament. Over the weekend, Trevor was shoutcasting a match featuring the one and only Don Hoosen. John Damaris spoke to Trevor about how the tournament is shaping up and who's doing well.
All right, Trevor, Mr. Tactical Tortoise himself. I understand that you started a small TTS tournament that has absolutely blown up. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, it's been crazy. We started what we're going to call the Tactical Tortoise Tabletop Simulator Tournament, and it was going to be a little 16-person event and to give away a Chaos Army, and all of the spots for that went away in 2 hours, and we continued to get requests for more tournaments, so we've turned it into a whole series.
Cool. Well, let's talk about that. How many people do you have currently playing in this series of tournaments?
So currently, we just launched pod number 6, and each pod's a 16-person tournament. We're looking at it's around 106 applications. There's a little bit of overlap in there, so there's probably 60 or 70 people currently in the event. But the Discord that we're running it out of, I just did my math wrong. So it'd be 96 applications. And so it's probably 60 or 70 individuals in the event. And the Discord that we're running it out of that we started last week already has broken 120 members. So and with more applications pouring in every day.
Right. So people, the big takeaway from this is people should understand that if you want to play, you'll just open more pods to make room for them. Is that kind of how it's working?
Yeah. Yep. Basically, we're trying to open 2 pods per week, but based on demand, that number may increase in the future. We'll see how it goes.
Right. So, how many are you playing in currently?
So, I'm just playing in pod 1 right now. I fortunately haven't had time to jump into many more. We've been live streaming as many games as we possibly can over on my YouTube channel at youtube.com/tacticaltortoise, and so I've been doing a lot of live commentary and just live streaming as much Tabletop Simulator 40K as I can fit in my schedule.
Very cool. So let's talk about, you've got some pretty big names in your tournament, right?
Yeah. So we have a couple pods that have some pretty interesting competition in them. We just streamed a game with Don Hoosen, obviously Chaos Extraordinaire, playing his new Death Guard list that has 40 Plague Marines in it.
Chaos Space Marine player, really? I mean, that's kind of his bag, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that was a wicked game. That was against a pure Thousand Suns army. So actually, Chaos really coming out of the woodwork, and we're seeing a ton of Chaos showing up on all of these pods.
Interesting. So quick question, not to get sidetracked from talking about, you know, some pretty big names in the tournament, but have you noticed, like, are lists more interesting because there's no, like, being restricted by what you own? So are people trying some pretty wacky stuff or doing some really cool stuff?
Yeah. So there's definitely been a lot more experimentation than you'd see in a normal event. So we've seen a lot of, you know, knight lists that I think people wouldn't normally play. We've seen a lot of, the Lord of Skulls list. We streamed a game with that, the triple Lord of Skulls. That player, I think, was considering playing that list and was trying it out in the tournament to see how it went. We've seen a bunch of pretty wacky combo lists. One of our pod 2, I believe, has a Stompa in it. So that's pretty fun. There's we streamed a 9 Mephitic Blighthauler list the other day. So lots of really interesting lists, you know, sort of popping out that, people are just trying to try out. But then also people are really digging into all of the new releases that they haven't necessarily had the chance to, you know, get on their painting table yet. So we announced just a couple days ago that we would be using the new Death Watch rules before the White Dwarf released. And immediately, a lot of pods just filled up with Death Watch and Adeptus Astartes soup lists.
Nice. That's very interesting. So quick question. With all of this like activity, like how are you balancing all of that? Because you're like organizing all of these pods, right? And playing in one and streaming a bunch of them?
Yeah, that's correct.
Like is that causing any trouble for you? Like not all heroes wear capes, right? But this is kind of a pretty big effort, I would say.
I'm quarantined right now, so I don't have much else to do, but I am I'm spending probably between 8 and 10 hours a day on this whole thing, but like I said, I don't have anywhere to go, so
you're just serving the community and doing something fun. Well, thank you very much for that, Trevi. You guys should definitely go check it out. We'll have a link in the show notes. You know, no reason not to sign up. I guess the last question is, do you guys help people who are learning TTS? Is that a big problem or do they need to sort of know what they're doing before they sign up?
The community that we generated in the Discord is actually very welcoming. And there's a lot of members in there who will hop on and help people out. Right now, we don't have a sort of a process to teach people Tabletop Simulator. There is a dedicated Tabletop Simulator 40K community that I think has some teachers that are a little bit more suited than I am to running through everything. I don't have all the little cool
hotkeys.
All the tips and tricks down quite yet. But if you pop up in our Discord and ask around, we have a looking for group channel, then absolutely somebody will you'll find somebody to give you a lowdown on the system.
Cool. Would you say that after you've played one or two games, you're probably good to play in one of these tournaments?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And if you play against someone who is experienced with it, they can show you almost everything, in your first game. And it won't take that long. Usually you find a tabletop simulator game. Once you get the hang of it, it takes a little bit longer than a standard game of 40K on the tabletop. It's about 3.5 to 4 hours, but not like significantly longer.
All right. Very cool. Thanks, Trevi.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, John. And hope everybody's staying healthy.
It's Trevi from Tactical Tortoise. If you want to watch along, links to the YouTube channel are in our show notes. Okay, before we go, we want to honor every aspect of our awesome hobby by featuring the great work that people are doing with models that they are lovingly crafting and painting. So every day on the show from here on in, we're going to feature a model of the day. If you're listening to the podcast on YouTube, by the way, we're on YouTube now. Look us up and you'll be able to see lots of visuals as we go along. You'll see pictures of the model there and they'll be available on our 40K Today Facebook and Instagram pages. Our first model of the day is the new Gazcool Thraka by Roy Gonzalez on Instagram. This is a stunning explosion of reds and metallic greens with perfect highlights. Thraka has never looked so good. Roy captures all of the brutality of the beast, but manages to get absolute clarity between every separate element. And at the same time, it's packed with bright colors. Pictures of the model on Roy's Instagram have garnered more than 3,000 likes. Links to his Instagram page are in our show notes. It is well worth a look. And that's it for today. Hey, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it. A big thank you to our content producer, Alex Painter, our technical producer, Seamus Ronan, and our brand new team member, Tanya Gates, for all their hard work once again in putting the program together. If you have anything you think we should feature on the show, please get in touch.
You're listening to Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody, we are back. It's me and Adam. I'm not even sure where this is fitting in. Sometimes after Star Wars, sometime after 40K Today, sometime before tomorrow.
And we're talking AdMech. So Warhammer community have just chucked up a couple articles about some of the new AdMech models that are coming out. I'm very excited. Like the dogs and the hounds are getting me the most. I think those models look stupendous. Have you seen them?
Yeah, yeah. I think I prefer of the two like troops there. I think I prefer the ones with the torch Sorry, the wings. The wings and the torches. I think that's I think that's going to be some good play.
Yeah, I don't mind them. I think they're fine. I'm the dogs and the horses, though. Having like a muzzle that's a flamer, I think is hilarious.
Fair enough. You know, like, and if you could tell they're going to have some type of battle function too. It's not just something that says, hey, I get more movement on this guy.
Exactly right. And man, I'm just a there's a revolver. It's the Architect revolver. It's just a magnum. It's just got a magnum. It's like, yeah, cool. Your lasers are all good, but sometimes you just need a high caliber bullet and just pop them in the head. But I'm a big fan of those ones. The kind of Rustalkery looking guys with the wings. I don't mind the wings. I wish they were a little bit less big. I feel like they're too big. I feel like I'm just going to break the absolute crap out of those wings if I bought that model. On top of that, I think me and you are both notorious for how much and what our opinions of the new flying stands are. And I feel like a fragile model on a fragile stand, especially for me, how clumsy and prone to breaking models I am, I'm like, oh, I'm not quite sure about that purchase. I'm probably going to get some anyway, though.
Just hours. Well, I need to see how it all fits together. I guess right now I'm not convinced that these particular models that I can assume what some of their stats now, like how they work together, are going to replace what I consider to be a strong AdMech list.
Yeah, well, I see there's quite a strong core of AdMech units at the moment, and all that core is built around really strong troops and really strong heavy supports, and then some pinch-hitting tech stuff in the elites like Electro Priests. Their fast attacks and the other elites, things like Infiltrators, do have a place and can get used where needs be, and they're a lot of fun as well. And I feel like the Flyers are just a version of Rustalkers and Infiltrators that have Fly instead of Deep Strike, which is better. Like, Fly is just better. It's just plain a better option. But is it adding another dimension to the gameplay? I'm not quite sure yet.
I think if I were to pick, just rules unseen, which one I would want to throw in an army, I think it'd be the guys with the wings.
Yeah, the guy, like, they got Fly. Like, Fly is the best keyword to have in the game, apart from character. Yeah.
But model-wise, I really like the riders on the Hounds.
I love the riders, man. I am a huge fan. And actually, like, is it just that every single kit that is not a special character that comes out from GW now is going to be a dual kit? I think it is, yeah. I think it's just accepted everything's going to be a dual kit.
That's okay.
Absolutely it's okay. When you think Skitarii, you got the Skitarii side, you got the AdMech side, but like within that, so you've got Rangers, yeah? You've got your Vanguard and you've got your Rangers, hence the Dogs. The Dogs are going to have a Vanguard equivalent that's probably going to be more close, not close combat, but more shorter range, and you're going to be, your Ranger equivalent is probably going to be longer range. EG, the same thing for the Flying Guys. The Flying Guys have got a variant that's got a Flechette Carbine, 24-inch, Assault 5, Strength 3. Really good for Wrath of Mars, quite good for that. And then they've got the Flamer one, which is 12-inch range.
So the 12-inch range Flamer, I think, is really pretty strong because you're likely going to get a come down within 9 version.
Yeah, well, you can take it, even if these guys don't have Deep Strike, which they're kind of likely to do if they've got a jump pack equivalent, you can take them as Lucius and Deep Strike them for 1 CP. And yeah, Deep Striking 12 inches with a Neg 1 Flamer, nothing wrong with that, especially when you're playing into a Horde matchup or Orcs or something like that.
Yeah, with some ability to control what the D6 shot is. And
I'm betting they're going to have something like that. They're going to have some ability to manipulate a bunch of different things. And that's at each Psychic Awakening release, we've seen another kind of layer of efficiency and synergy being added to every book. I'm interested to see what the AdMech, I've heard a couple of different rumors, but these are rumors that from ages ago, so I've got no freaking idea if any of them actually have any merit. But one that was floated was that if you're pure AdMech, you get a second, what is it, the doctrine table?
The doctrine? Yeah,
you get a second doctrine table. You get one for being mono. I thought that was a really cool idea if they went down that route, but take a grain of salt. That's a rumor I heard.
I don't want to get too speculative, especially while we're looking at the article itself. So we have enough here
we don't have to speculate.
Yeah, to
not meet on the bone. Guys. So the guys that have the flamers, when they jump in, they've also got a strength user -1 AP attack in combat. And if they are built off the Rustalker Infiltrator chassis, that'll be strength 4 as well. And they could have up to three attacks, maybe 4 attacks, who knows. So that's not insignificant as well. When you add in that on the Deep Strike, they maybe have D6 strength 4 -1 attacks. And then in combat, they could have maybe 3 or 4 strength 4 -1 attacks as well. That's a lot.
You'll be able to measure 2-inch coherency because their wings will be at least that wide.
That's actually true. They're just touching the tips and their incoherency. Now, here's Something that's controversial to me, I'm not sure, quite sure where you sit with it, but the flyer. I'm not a fan. Putting it out there. I've kept that quiet, but
okay.
Doesn't do much for me. What are your thoughts, mate?
I don't see how you could not be a fan. and let me say why.
So you're telling me I'm wrong.
I'm saying that maybe you have not looked at all the virtues of this vehicle.
Okay. Sell it to me, Matt. Right.
If those things didn't look like wings, if the wings didn't look like they were animal wings, I think you would find less fault with the model.
It also has lizard legs.
Okay, bear with me.
And the lizard legs have fins.
Bear with me. Bear with me. If it had like a helicopter blade where those wings are at the top,
yep.
I think that there would be enough on the model that like you could anchor your mind to two or three different elements of it, and then you wouldn't mind the rest. But as it stands right now, I believe that you look at the model and it has three or four different elements that could be perceived as being in competition with each other.
For ridiculousness or just overall aesthetic?
For pulling what your brain thinks it should, quote unquote, look like. Now, I haven't looked at Da Vinci's, all his sketches. There's probably, just as I'm saying that, I'm probably eating those words, is because there's already a sketch that looks just like this thing in his book somewhere. Like, I would have, maybe. But I think that that's the design elements here. These go back to, you know, early Ornithopter sketches, and you needed some type of propulsion system to get you off the ground. Those legs are probably either because they thought they were going to have to be bird legs that they were going to have to manually manipulate for running, jumping, taking off, or landing.
Yep.
And then you can't not have 40K guns on it. So I'm saying there's a lot going on here.
There's so many things I could point to. also, actually, here's a very relevant question. How big is this thing? Like, the base that they've got it on in the picture?
Yeah. That's got to be a flyer base.
It's got to be a flyer base, which means the wingspan of this thing is gigantic. So the biggest footprint flyer that's not a super heavy that I can think of, it might be the Tiger Shark. I don't know how big a Tiger Shark is, but I think it's a Valkyrie.
A Valkyrie
is the same footprint as a Baneblade, if not a little bit bigger. This thing looks comparable to that. And my issue with that is it makes it harder to keep the thing on the table. You have to have every point of the model, every single fin and gun and spine has to stay entirely on the table. And the bigger
good,
the footprint,
just get good.
You just got to get good, man. But yeah, sounds like it's. I mean, one of these has like
someone
said,
who plays with vultures.
It's got chicken legs. I'm sure it can land. It can hover on its chicken. It can stand. I'm sure it can stand on its chicken legs.
Yeah, it's getting. Look,
maybe I'll model it. Maybe if I get one, I'll model it with its wings like retracted back, standing on its legs, and I won't have as many issues with it.
So it appears to have a bunch of guns on it, which might make it worth it, no matter what.
So, the gunny gun one, which is the Stratoraptor, is armed with a twin Cognos laser cannon and a pair of heavy fossil blasters. So that's pretty good. Then it's also, I think every variant has their mandatory AdMech couple of stubbers,
yeah.
Yeah, it's like, what guns does it have? Well, it starts minimum with these two stubbers, and then the rest.
Yep.
I think there's what looks like to be a gunship version, a transport version, and a bomber version. I'm always interested in bombers. I'm never going to say I'm not going to be interested in bombers, because I think bombs add a very unique mechanic to the game, and they're always going to be a bit of fun, because I think there's a lot of ways you can make bombs work. Because they deal damage in the movement phase, they can get past a lot of defensive stratagems. Because they deal mortal wounds, they get past a lot of saves. And because they are dealt literally as you move, you have complete control over that interaction. Whereas, you know, in the shooting phase, you have to hit, you have to wound, you have to whatever. I'm a big fan of the bomber. So no matter what happens, I'll be looking into the bomber. And I'll probably look into the transport. And I think that's what people are talking about this thing bringing to the table for AdMech. So it's I think I've said this to you before, but AdMech, upon release of the AdMech and Skitarii Rangers in Sems Edition, did not have a single transport. There was not a single transport available to them. When the Termite got released, they then had a very expensive transport, or like 134 points with the two storm bolters, then more expensive if you want better guns. But the Termite's good. It's toughness 8, bunch of wounds. It can deep strike. That's cool. But it was, you know, not everyone wants to buy an expensive Forge World kit when they want four or five of them in their army. You can't do a rhino rush with termites. It's like,
yep,
going to refinance my house. Got to break up with my partner. Sorry, honey.
To it.
Wedding's off.
Yeah, you feel like you're doing something that you necessarily maybe shouldn't be doing, you know, quote unquote, because not everyone has availability of the same models at you at that point.
Mm. And then they got given the toaster tank, which is the Doomstrider, the Scorpius. And both variants of that, really good, really good.
Yep.
That model, love-hate with me as well. But so they already have a transport, but now they have a flying transport, and a transport that can, assumably, if it's the same as other flyers, can move between 20 and 40 inches, possibly further if it's got supersonic.
It can 60 move 60. Or something,
Yeah, so allow a lot more of those units that maybe those pinch hitting tech units that maybe might have been not have been looked at as much could get another look in. Like, I'm a big fan of Fulgurite and Corpuscari Electro Priests.
Yep.
Problem is the Corpuscari hit the table, they kill something, usually probably an anti-infantry thing, and then like one repulsor turns around and picks up 20 of them. But the Fulgurites can just be such a pain for your opponent to deal with if you use them correctly. Being able to chuck, hopefully, 10 to 12 of them in this transport and literally put them right in front of your opponent turn one, I think that adds a lot of power. So if not a lot of power, at least it adds pressure. And that's one thing that AdMech don't do in combat very much. They can add a lot of shooting pressure, but for combat pressure, you need to use Dragoons. You need to use Electro Priests. These things can be very hit and miss. Like, I can't tell you, I love Dragoons. I love those models. I think they're fantastic. The Chicken Walkers, it's crazy good. I wish this thing had those legs instead of bird legs.
Ran her on the ground like a
yeah,
like an actual turkey or something. That's weird.
yeah, like some kind of peacock.
Yeah, I'm not seeing. I think the model is cool. I mean, I've seen the cockpit off and seen how the rider's plugged in and stuff, and there's just
that actually.
It's a pretty masterful thing. I mean,
it looks pretty sweet. I'm looking through the canopy right now on the J-Dub picture, and it looks fantastic.
I think people are gonna like these, and I think there's gonna be two things that support them being on the end of the table is the fact that people want to play with them, and I think they're gonna have decent rules. It's a rules per point cost kind of efficiency that you may struggle with and see in other AdMech stuff. Although AdMech stuff is just okay right now, they are missing mm-hmm. some tools, and I hope this gives them some of that.
So I'm going to have a broad sweeping statement now. This is Adam's ring-a-ding broad sweeping statement of the night.
Okay.
I'm not a fan of this new aesthetic for AdMech, like the e.g. the toaster tanks and now these flyers. I think the infantry looks great, and the dogs and the horse and riders look great. When AdMech first came out, there was this kind of straight up and down mechanical deadly feel to it, e.g. being like the infiltrators, the Rustalkers, the Dragoons, the Rangers, all these things, had a very clinical, very like mechanical, built for purpose aesthetic, which harkened back to the 30K Mechanicum. There's nothing flashy about those guys. They look deadly. They are deadly. They look fantastic. They look like what they are. They're trying to go a different direction with these guys. Like they're trying to build an aesthetic in, I think. They're trying to build a thing, but it just looks a bit clumsy to me. Like nothing, all the new stuff just looks clumsy. It doesn't look dangerous. This flyer doesn't look deadly. It looks like an insect I want to hit with a fly swat. Same with the toaster tank.
Until you realize it's the size of a Baneblade.
Exactly right. Same with the toaster tank. It doesn't look dangerous. It looks like a toaster that I get from Kmart for $12.
Okay. With that particular tank, and not to play devil's advocate really, but I think it was a clear throwback to a landing boat. And,
it was,
you know, and that's what it is. It's supposed to invoke with you those types of feelings, and if you don't have those types of feelings, then you just don't. You're not gonna get it.
But see, that model already exists. It's called the Gorgon. You know, the Forge World Gorgon transport.
Sure.
Yeah, and you look at that aesthetic, and that's this. It's like Deathcore Krieg. It looks brutal. It looks savage. It's cold. It's metallic. It's not friendly. And then they've got this bright red and cream toaster that they bring out.
Okay.
You know, and you see where my differences are?
Look, I don't disagree with your opinion, right? Because you can feel however you want to feel, but I just mean that's the reason it looks the way that it does is that.
Yeah,
and, I think that that's why it does. These other things, like this plane we're talking about, I don't mind it. Yeah, I like it. I think that it's going to be one of those to where it's probably going to have good enough rules to where we take them anyway, even if we don't quite like them. But if this was a helicopter, I don't think anyone would say anything.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it does quite look like a helicopter. If you were to knock off the wings and chuck a helicopter, it would look like a helicopter, wouldn't it?
I think exactly right. And I think that if this come out as, but it also wouldn't look, it wouldn't fit into that. I play 40K. I mean, think about this. If this was a helicopter, you know, I mean, people out there would be playing helicopter toys from one or two off different scale.
Yeah.
Man, I mean, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, we're talking about aesthetics of the thing and what their what our wish list for our dreams rules there are going to be, but you know, we don't know any of that.
Well, so,
but I like the look.
So I'll harken back to the last most controversial one for me was the Torox. So when the Torox, I saw pictures of the Torox, yeah. I'm like, I love the infantry. I love Scion infantry. I still love them. The Baroque kind of carapace armor, the special ops aesthetic. Fantastic. Hated the look of the Torox. This is before I got the model.
Yeah.
I got six of them.
Yeah. I think we're about to hear a turnaround story here.
Well, hopefully, I would be more than happy to come on here and say, man, it won me over when I saw it in the flesh. So maybe I'll just leave it there rather than bagging onto it. I'll hold out until I've actually watched it.
There's a lot of
and it. Actually seen it.
Man, speaking about change the subject about seeing things in the flesh, I have not gotten one of those Catechin kernels.
No,
and I'm heartbroken.
So good.
I'm heartbroken.
I love it.
I got this. I said the same anxiety as everybody else, but I play Catechins and I just really want to get this on the table.
Yeah, and this I hope I know. A couple of months from now, a couple of years from now, they'll release just a clan pack for that guy because he's just too cool.
Yeah.
He's too cool to not be just buyable, purchasable.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm still holding out hope, crossing my fingers, hoping something shakes out. Mm. We shall see. Man, but Adam, that's it. I know it's been a long show and we got some other things to inject and but it's going to be a fun one. And well, if people made it through our Star Wars talk.
Yes. If they're like, well, if they're just going to talk Star Wars, I might as well just go listen to a Star Wars podcast.
They're not as good as this. No, I'm just kidding.
No, they're not. You're right, they're not. But it's because we know less about it that what we're saying is better.
There's some beauty about that.
Truth to it.
So I bet, yeah. See, when someone has the beauty of their smartphone open where they can go and find out where we were wrong, whereas you and I just get to live in our ignorance.
Yes, we do. Enjoy it. Revel in it. Moment. Soak in it.
For that moment. Yeah.
I'm basing myself in my ignorance right now.
Oh, man. Well, yeah. Thanks for joining me. I said for everybody, if you haven't already, please like, share, subscribe, hit a notification bell that lets you know whenever we publish up there. 5-star reviews. I'm bringing back the 5-star review. So if you write a 5-star review, I will read it on the air.
Oof. Good choice.
Leave 5-star reviews. I mean, it's got to be in good spirit and everything, of course, my discretion. And yes, even if you're not in the U.S., leave a 5-star review in the iTunes for whatever it is, wherever you are. I can find it. I've learned how to find it and go back and see all those 5-star reviews. Thank you for everyone who's made me an honorary Canadian. Oh man, Adam. Yeah. Thanks for coming on and talking about Down Under Pairings and BCP merge. We're going to get more to come on that. And I'm glad you're doing all right.
Thanks, man. Appreciate being on. Thanks so much for having me. And thanks for, I don't know. Tangents are always more enjoyable with you.
Have a good night, everybody.
Good night.
Puts baby in the corner.